Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 457. How are you all doing? I hope you're all well. I'm joined today by someone who's been on before, but someone who's been on twice before, in fact. Jordan Stevens was on one of the really early episodes and then came on for the mental health episodes May 2021. But I said then I wanted to have a proper catch up with Jordan because I think when we chatted before, he was recently out of Rizzle Kicks, I think, and was finding his way a lot, artistically, personally, in all sorts of ways. And I've kind of been able to kind of stand back and watch a bit as he's really just, I feel like he's just figuring everything out on small scales and on big scales. I rate the dude. So I invited him back on. He also has put a new album out called Let Me Die Inside You, and I think it's fantastic. So now was the perfect time for him to come back on and have a little chat. You'll hear more about that. You'll hear more about his acting, his process, all of it. This is a really good chat. We got really deep and really heavy quite quick, and we did that the last two times and it always seems to catch Jordan off guard, but he's always happy to wade out into those deep waters, and I love him for it. So yeah, this is a really good chat. Let's get into it. Before we do, we're brought to you as ever by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. That's where you can buy loads of my old music, my merch, all sorts of good shit. There's Patreon for supporting the podcast, patreon.com/ScroobiusPip. You can also get podcast merch on the website as well at Speech Development Records. And you can follow me over on Twitch, twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipio, where I'm doing a load of things. But one of the things I'm enjoying the most is I'm doing these big Friday night shows. So 7 or 7.30 on a Friday night, tune in. I'm not playing computer games. I'm doing a wonderful show for you all to interact with and have a glorious time. So head over there and enjoy that. It's good fun. Oh, before we get into it as well, I'm giving you a bonus episode on Friday with an amazing writer I'm a big fan of called Joe Barton. He did Giri Hadji. He's doing loads of really good things, so you're going to enjoy that. But yeah, that's everything I need to tell you about. Let's get into this chat because I think it's a cracking one. And we really kind of, Jordan is incredibly open and honest. And yeah, we go there, man. We go there. So this is episode 457 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with the wonderful Mr. Jordan Stevens. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. I'm here today with Jordan Stevens. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I didn't have the best night's sleep, Scroob.
It's funny, we were saying just before we got started, we were going to record last week, and then I was a diva about microphones and stuff, and then we're now recording on a Monday morning, and yeah, I'm sure we'll still make it work, mate.
I think there's always something to talk about. I've kind of got myself into that. I thought it felt like a Sod's Law thing, because I've been looking forward to speaking with you, and I just woke up. I had a not enough hours, and I'm not very good with the lack of sleep. I don't know what are you like with?
I'm decent with it. I get a lot of insomnia, are you? So I've learned to be to be used to it, because it can be a fucker. I'm lucky because weirdly, growing up, my mum will often have like 4 or 5 hours sleep, and that's it, and she's fine. So
yeah, same actually.
Witnessing people who are okay on it can kind of get into your head, all right, it's cool. Because sometimes it can be that psychological thing of, if you're telling yourself, I've not had enough sleep, I'm not in the right frame of mind, it can do it. But it's a mad.
Yeah, I do that. I can definitely psych myself out. That's what I've been trying to psych myself in. That's what I've been doing this morning. I just did a workout, which obviously helped.
Damn right. Are you into cold showers at all? I'm all about cold showers. I think they're amazing for mental health.
I'm going to do that today. Thank you for reminding me.
I do a load of this, like in Margate, which we'll get round to talking about because we're dog walk pals. But I'll do early morning or late night swims when I can, and having that cold water is just so therapeutic. And when you do it and there's no one about because you're doing it either 6 a.m. or like 11 o'clock at night, and it's just you're floating in the
cold. At this time of year,
darkness.
100%. Yeah. Right, this time of year, I think the winter was a bit daunting. My dream was to kind of come off the back of the summer, go into autumn, and then, but I never did. And
keep it up, yeah.
My issue is mainly consistency. I actually do enjoy cold water, but I find that if I stop doing cold showers, or then it's right back to the beginning.
100%. Mate, I was doing them for about 4 years straight, and then when I was filming in Vancouver the other year, I stopped. And I've literally just started getting back into them now.
Yeah.
Like that's, I tried a few times over the last year and a half, just couldn't get back into it. And now I'm back into it. I'm back chewing everyone's ear about it. Going, man, have you tried?
No, well, actually, I'm in Budapest at the moment.
Yeah.
And they're famous for these baths. And there's one called Geller. So I have actually plunged since I've been here. Oh, they have the proper Finnish set up. The cold water plunge pool right next to the sauna. It's a dream. I might do that today, actually. That sounds more fun.
Well, you came on the podcast years ago, like early days of the podcast I had you on. And I've told you privately a few times. I know we had the brief mental health chat, but I've been excited to get you back on because I just think you've been developing and growing and figuring out who you are in the most beautiful way in these past few years, artistically, and chatting to you personally. It's dope to see in person as well. So I'm excited to talk to you, man. Oh. And yeah, I think we're going to have a lovely conversation.
It means a lot to hear that because I find it often, as I'm sure many creators do, it's difficult to get an outside perspective. I can definitely drown in my own conspiratorial, is that a word?
Yeah.
in perpetual conspiracy and like the weight of my own inventions, I can sometimes struggle to get out of it. So when you sent me a message with that, it really does mean a lot. I try and message people. I just really appreciate you sharing that. It means a lot.
It's dope, man. And I want to talk about Let Me Die Inside You, because I think it's got your best piece of work to date on. There's one track in particular that I think is the best thing you've done. It floored me the first time I heard it. It was one of them that I was just, I need to go back, I need to listen to this again. But before we get to that, I'm also pretty sure your dog gets a shout out on the new record. I'm sure I popped hearing his name going, I know that guy.
But
that's kind of how we've almost reconnected a bit in recent times. We bumped into each other on dog walks a fair few times, and it's been really nice. How do you find that? How do you find being a dog owner and having those times that you have to? Like I've talked about it to a few people. When you get a dog, you go, well, I need to make sure they're getting exercise, they're getting fresh air, they're getting food. It's what they need to live. We don't think about that for ourselves because we need that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of, when we don't have a pet, we're like, oh man, I'm just going to fester. And when we do, we go, oh, to keep them alive and healthy, we need to do all these things. It's good for us as well, right?
Yeah, it is. But I think actually that was why I got a dog. I think it was in an attempt to reorientate the basic survival mode in myself.
Yeah.
A very simple approach to love and care. And yeah, you get those rewards back. I've been away from my dogs for nearly a month now because I've been working and my girlfriend's been working it too. So my mom's been looking after them, but I miss the dog walks, man. I miss getting up and walking. Like the mental health benefits of that are immense.
Yeah.
And Margate on the beach has been a huge thing for me. And that was mainly because of lockdown. I locked down in Margate and it was just me and I've got two rescue dogs now, but it was just me and my first rescue dog Spike. And that first lockdown was really good for me. It really helped me. I think we spoke about that actually, because you did a brief thing on the lockdown.
That
was great. And it did. I responded really positively to it. And just that point of connection, perhaps to the sea, the feeling of being near the ocean or the sea, and the regularity of fresh air, and it turns out that I quite liked a little bit of habit and routine. I never thought it. I've lived so much of my life as a chaotic person, but you have to have an element of routine when you have a pet too. You have to walk them twice a day minimum, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, massive benefits. And it took me a minute as well to, you know what's funny? I'll tell you this thing. I remember when I first got Spike, I actually couldn't get my head around the fact that the dog loved me. It was a bizarre experience. Because he took a while to come out of his shell. It was only when I would get stoned. I don't really get stoned that much anymore, but I used to get stoned at night and I just used to stare at Spike and be like, fuck me, this dog, like, does this dog just love me? This is my dog. Like, I'm this dog's human. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we'd just kind of like look at each other and I'd have these kind of deep moments. I'd just cuddle him on my bed. And now as we've got older, it's just, we've just grown with each other. I don't know. It's an odd experience. It's an odd experience because it's just an unconditional thing now. It's an unconditional thing. And I went through the hard times with him and, you know, with Spike, not with the new dog, Mimi. She's a bit wild, but Spike, at least, like, you know, I walk him off the lead and stuff. You would have seen that. I don't have him. He's just like my little soulmate, you know? But it is interesting now because we've got a second one. Me and my girlfriend, we got one called Mimi, who is the polar opposite of Spike. Absolute wild dog, coyote, like peak nuts. And it's amazing seeing that. It's more life lessons from that absolute, what's yin and yang, you know?
Yeah.
So now I've got to deal with like ultimate energy, ultimate affection, like full on. She's just on it, you know?
Yeah.
I learn a lot from them. I really do.
I love it. I want to kind of nail down on part of that. What's your kind of your relationship with love and with acceptance? Because again, just you stating the kind of shock and awe that Spike loves you, and thinking of your career, because you had such a pop side of things, you've been exposed to that, the fickleness of adoration, I guess. You've had that moment where you're praised, but then also you'll be turned on or hated, or record labels in that area of pop, it's like you're the best thing in the world and then you're worthless. So how's your journey been with the acceptance of
validation
of that validation and of that love, I guess?
Yeah, man. I mean, talk about a piercing question, Scrooge.
Yeah, no, mate.
Straight
sorry.
In with a knife, twisted it. yes, incredibly hard. I've had to rebuild, I think, my concept of validation.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult historically to self-validate. And I'm quite envious of people who do. And I'm still learning it. You know, I've turned 30 now. And my main focus with my own thoughts is training myself to positively enforce things that I've done.
Yeah.
Because from achieving kind of public notoriety at like 18, and it'd been quite a lot until about 23, 24. I was either propped up on an extreme high, whether that be money or attention or drugs, you know? Mm. So I'm or actually even sex. I was in this whirlwind, you know? So even when it came down to like opinions on things, I'd be playing, it's almost cliche. I'd be playing stuff to everyone I meet. If I'm, you know, hooking up with a girl, I'm playing, oh, check out my new song. not all the time, by the way. That makes me sound awful. No. But I just constantly be exchanging ideas and basing my own concept of like what was a vibe off, which is, listen, peer feedback is essential. But it got to the point where as I've got older, my circle shrunk, which is a good thing. You know, like I've got a stable relationship with a woman I love, and suddenly I have to ask myself if I like something. Just me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. And also the thing that skews that for me is when I was younger, I really had a lot of self-belief. And then I took a shot and I scored on my first attempt. You know, me and Harley, Rizzle Kicks, we couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe that this was happening. We put a video up on YouTube. We get a record deal. You know, we put the song to radio. It shouldn't be that quick. That's not how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be...
It's mad deceptive when it's that easy, isn't it? We had that with Thou Shalt. Thou Shalt was our first thing, me and Dan. And Dan in particular had other bands, other projects that he'd told over. This was my first try of anything in music, really. It was like, well, this is easy, isn't it? We're on Radio 1. This is a fucking piece of piss. Like, we made a video for 100 quid. This is easy. But then, you then get to go, oh, right, it's deeper than that.
It is. Yeah. And it's a classic kind of, looking back on it now with the experience I have of growing up a bit and taking time away and working on myself, I'd almost be like looking back at myself running full pelt into a brick wall. It's like I'm watching myself sprinting, you know, into a brick wall a little bit, just because I believe that I needed to have a more sturdy inner core concept of self. I think the reason why a lot of young entertainers perhaps really struggle and often destroy themselves in the limelight is because they don't know the fuck they are. It doesn't matter what music you're putting out, what films you're in, whatever. You don't know who the fuck you are. There's no way. There's actually no way. Maybe if you've lost your parents or something like that, maybe if you've gone through an exceptional amount of grief, you're forced to mature quicker. But just purely based on experience, you haven't grown up. That's why when you see people who have lived a whole life pop off, they don't give a fuck about any of that shit. Like Ricky Gervais. He don't care. He got famous at like 40. That's why he's rinsing. But there's nothing to prove in that space. Yeah. Or people who have had beautiful kind of like 10-year, 15-year ascensions. I look at that now and think, wow, that makes sense. You've had this complete, you know.
You've learned in the right way. You've come up in the role. But it's why I've always, I've talked about it a load in the past, but it's why I can't, there was a period where it was really in fashion to really hate on Bieber or on Miley or whoever else. It's like, yo, they might not be my kind of thing. They might be dickheads, but why wouldn't they be?
Yeah.
Like they've popped off so young and they've had so much. It's impossible. It's what a song of mine, The Struggle, is actually about. It's impossible to hold people to standards when their experiences are so, the same standards when their experiences are so different. And that's not to say that we should just allow people to do whatever we want or they want, but we should have more empathy and go, all right, this person's probably a dickhead because from about the age of 15, they've had everything they could possibly want. They're going to grow out of that, hopefully, and they're going to develop and they're going to learn, but they're in the public eye. Again, I lucked out because I started doing this stuff at like 25. I'd had my years of 16, 17, 18 of being a dickhead, of getting into drugs too much and doing all this stuff that if I was in the public eye, it would have been a horrible thing. But I'd done all that. So yeah, exactly as you say, it was the perfect age to go, all right, this is cool, and not lose your mind too much.
Yeah, I think that's a good... I mean, with my current pursuits in my life, in spaces where I haven't achieved that kind of... I don't know, notoriety. Now, if that happened, I would be way better equipped to deal with something like that and know how to gather. You know what I mean? And I think just as a quick side note, the other factor with me and my self-validation was that I never wanted to be a pop star. And we probably said this the first conversation we had because it's been on my mind for the last kind of 8 years, but I didn't know you could be made something with, like, it wasn't my choice.
Consent.
You know what I mean? I lost this thing. And essentially that was what precursed me stepping away with Hiles, because by the time Hiles' anxiety was through the roof and streaming started to come in, I was just done. I didn't want to be on this hamster wheel. Do you know what I mean? It was the plan at that point was that let's fucking grow up. I remember with Hiles, like, fuck this, man. We made an incredible impact on music. Hilariously now, in hindsight, people are great. You're talking, you mentioned that as a pop star, you have the two worlds. Well, as anyone, I suppose, who has, but particularly with kind of mainstream on TV and all that shit, you do get this juxtaposition, which is usually reflective of how the people feel about themselves, to be honest. But you're used as a punching bag for sure. But it's funny now because people, in hindsight, a lot of the kids who are listening to us, whatever, they've grown up now and they're fucking superstars. Like, I know of two or three artists who've come and seen us perform and they're like 13, 14. We're like the coolest fucking kids in town. It's mad.
Mate, it's weird you say that because I've had in other worlds where I'm working on scripts, I've had some breakthroughs recently and it's come because I've had one or two bands on the podcast and either on the podcast or off the podcast, they've said, you proper influenced me when I was I was younger and this kind of thing. And it showed me that, and it's like, fuck. And it's made me go, right, in film and TV and that, I want to be doing stuff that's different and is going to influence kids in years to come. Not necessarily just, obviously, I want to be fucking Marvel, all these other things. There is all that, but I've realised, right, that's not the main thing. The main thing should be going, you right, I want to do know. Stuff that's,
yeah.
That's me, that's creative, that's going...
But you'll never know.
No one else would be doing this, you know? Yeah.
But you can't do it consciously, I don't think.
Yeah, we're
actually on the third wave, because technically you would have influenced me, so we're talking about a third wave generation. You get credit on that. If this was the blockchain... The people I'm talking about, you get like 5% anyway.
Yeah.
Because I told you again, like we said in the first podcast, you were taught thou was taught to me by a very enthusiastic music teacher when I was 12.
So, madness, isn't it?
But yeah, the point I think for me there was that conflict of self-validating, because something that I felt passionately was something. A piece of art that I created, you know, that Harley and I had made together, that we really loved and thought was great, was being looked at through a lens sometimes, not all the time.
Yeah.
And that spun me out. And I knew it was true. I started to go insane, because it was like, I knew it was true, because if we played our shit to like, I remember we got Pharoah Monch on a remix, who's my favorite, one top five favorite rappers of all time, maybe my favorite.
Yeah.
And there was no dodgy shit. I asked him. That was it. I was asked to do that, right? And I remember there was a bunch of hip hop purists who kicked off about it at the time, which I get it. I understand. But it was just fascinating, because from his perspective, when he's just heard a couple of kids doing some kind of backpack hip hop, and he's like, that's cool. You know, there's a, you know, label, there's a boom, boom. We did, you know, whatever. But I spoke to him directly, and I just reached out. I said, you're my favorite rapper. And it's just interesting because, and the same with DJ Premier. Like DJ Premier is like, probably one of the greatest hip hop artists alive, right? Like holding this shit down, still making music with Nas, still making music with every, you know. And that's our boy. Like we fuck with Primo, man. Like we bust jokes whenever we're in New York, because he doesn't care about celebrity juice or whatever fucking show we were forced onto to sell our album in 2013. He hasn't seen that. He's just hears the music. So I knew. That the music had substance to it, but I felt like I'd lost control of how we were viewed. So I kind of went off the rails with that, because I love music. That's why I made Wilded. I made a fucking grunge album. Harley went and made soul music, and then we just did other pursuits. But we are actually making music again, which is cool.
That's dope. That's exciting to hear. Cause I know Harley did just kind of, as you said, anxiety got there and things like that. And yeah. It's great to hear that there's more to come.
It did. It was a pressurized environment. I think a lot of young pop stars will say the same thing, that those early years are a blur entirely. We don't know what's going on. I see it. I watch these new young pop stars. These are rappers. Well, rappers pop now, which is crazy. But they're coming up and I see these interviews and they're talking about this life. And I just keep thinking, I hope they are like processing everything.
Yeah.
It feels like they are, because everyone's so present now. Remember, we were existing before Instagram, before any of that. We had Twitter, you know, I didn't have to Insta story my breakdowns and shit, you know, like I couldn't have possibly Insta story what I was doing in my daytime, because it would have appalled everyone.
Yeah. I feel you. Well, I mean, I want to get on to Let Me Die Inside You, because it does feel like it's a culmination of all the things that we've talked about here, of you having realizations, of you growing up, of you developing, of you becoming more comfortable with yourself. And the one of the reasons I was excited about it was because of beach walks and talks and hearing you seem genuinely excited about this stuff. And I hadn't heard any of it, but you seemed to be like, it felt like you were in a good place with it all. So I guess first things first, how was it to make? And how's it been to get stuff out there? Because, again, you've mentioned as well, Wildhood, all these other things. This is a Jordan Stevens album.
Yeah.
This isn't some other name or some other entity or character. This is your record. And so how is it?
The decision to just go by my own name was for the sake of convenience, I think. I change my name all the time. I've hidden. What say hidden? Have I hidden? Was that a Freudian slip? I don't know. Maybe I've hidden behind various aliases my whole life. I even have different names for accounts on my. Like I had to sort out one online account I had, because I just had an alias for like 7-8 years. But when I went to pick something up, I didn't have any proof that I was that person, because I was just so instinctively just creating these identities. And anyway. I went by it because, yeah, I had a moment where I realized that I'm always going to make music. That was the turning point where I was maybe reading some, one of Nick Cave's Red Letters or something like that. And I started thinking about Nick Cave and thinking, well, he's been making music for a really long time and he's just Nick Cave and then he's got some bad seeds and then, but he's also just Nick Cave. And I thought, well, I'm not a particular, my actual name, my government name, that I'm pretty sure at some point I will change it, but we'll talk about that another time. But I know that whatever my government name is will follow me, whatever I do, whether that's book writing or script writing, acting, whatever. It will. So I just thought, well, you know, why don't I make it so that when someone searches my name, they get everything. And I know I'm going to keep making music as long as I can, really, because it's I can't stop, Scroob. I know you have, which is wild to me, but I can't it doesn't even make practical sense to me to make music. I say this to myself, but I'm worried about on a public platform, but no, from a philosophical standpoint, I've completed music. Do you know what I mean? I really don't mean that as in I had some goals when I was younger and I completed
them. Yeah, you
did
what you set out to do.
And I have to remind myself of that all the time. Otherwise, I'll constantly be dissatisfied. So in terms of like getting back that thing, I don't need to, but I find myself going towards studios whenever I stop. It's just one thing. And I hear someone go, do you want to make something? I go, yeah, let's create this thing. And I just had all these demos that I was sat on. And I thought, I've just got to release something, man. I've got to put it out there because I've already not released two albums that I've created historically that are great albums. And I just, because of how I felt, I never put them out. Yeah. And then I changed, evolved, and I left them behind and I didn't want to ever do that again. And so my goal was to detach myself from the outcomes, you know, the kind of ancient spiritual way of looking at things, and purely put together a project to ensure that I had a sonic footprint of my life at this point.
That's really interesting hearing about stuff you've written and not released and then moved on from. Because I think music, again, if you ignore the rest of the world, or if you ignore the fucking industry side of it, it should be used as a diary, as moments in your life, as a historical reference of your journey, of you as a person. So I can completely understand that you've gone like, you've witnessed stuff that you've written and worked on and then no one else has really ever seen it. And now it's not your kind of thing. You're not feeling it. It's like, well, in a way, that's sad. Do you know what I mean? In a way, that should have been out there and you could have moved on from it now and now be like, I don't vibe with that anymore. But at least it had its moment. So I can completely understand that you've gone with this. It's like, right, I need to just put this stuff out and have it there. I'll move on at some point. But yeah.
That's honestly the bit that bugs me is I know that by this point, you know what I mean? By this point, I would have been like, you know, sure. And also is, I suppose, a fluid thought, but this is interesting because it ties into your validation question, because I can't understand whether or not this is a validation issue or a genuine belief. But a large part of the reason why I release what I create is because it's for other people. I feel sometimes as though I'm making stuff for other people, not for myself, which is hard to get that right, because I should also be proud of the fact that I hear artists all the time talk about their creations and loving their creations. I mean, like, I can't wait to show people the creations. And I think I struggle sometimes with the making something that I adore. I fast forward to the other bit and I'm like, I'm making something, I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to put it out there because I think other people will understand what it is.
Yeah.
And this is
for you to figure out what it is.
Yeah, you know? maybe. Yeah. But I don't know if that's me just, I don't know if that's my own, do you know what I mean? I don't know if that's like a continuation of my personal battle with confidence or if that is actually just a thing sometimes. Maybe people feel like vessels. Not everyone is so consciously, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think we make art for ourselves or for others?
I always had that, I'm excited to share this. Like, if I'd have those moments of, oh, fuck, I don't know how this has come from me. I need to show people. Like, I need people to see and hear this. But I think that kind of wore off. I was talking about this, I think, on Twitch the other day, how I still write bits here and there, but now the buzz of writing something that excites me is enough. I don't really I'm at a place at the moment that I don't really need anyone else's validation or thoughts on it. It's like, oh shit, yeah, that's dope. Right.
Great.
What do I want to focus on? And moving on to other things. But again, it's different points at different points, isn't it? So I don't think there's any right or wrong. I know the reason I found it so easy to stop touring, to stop playing live, was I had a realization that my excitement of playing live was, I want you guys to all hear this.
Yeah.
And then when I played all these specific songs enough times, I was like, cool, you've heard it. I'm going to go over here now. It's weird. I always thought at the time it was about the buzz of the crowd, that connection, this kind of that adoration or whatever else. And I realized after I stopped, no, it was never that. It was that exchange. It was going, look, hear this, or even just see this as the performance. I was really into the performance of side of it all. So, yeah, after I'd done that a load of times, it was like, no, I've shared that now. I can go in and relax.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I think when I play my music to people, like on a personal level, friends, my girlfriend, family, I do get buzzed, actually. I get that thing of, oh, look what I did, like in this moment. And if people pick up on particular lyrics, I'm over the moon. That experience I get. And that's what I say. Historically, I'd prop myself up almost on that. I'd be like, hit up my best mate, come over, let me play this. You know, like I woke up to a voice note this morning from a friend who had just heard some demos for this other stuff I'm making. And that keeps me. But I don't know whether it goes too far, because I also have another friend, an incredible poet, a friend, writer called Caleb Femi, who you should totally get on this, by the way. Yeah. Do you know Caleb Femi?
I'm familiar with, I don't know well, but yeah.
He's next level.
I think we've talked about Caleb coming on the podcast, actually. So
you should. I mean, he's just unbelievably talented. I'm fascinated by him because he'll just write something and then just put it out. He won't even tell me. Like, he'll like create something and release it into the world, because that's part of his.
You see,
he understands if he thinks something is dope.
That's the process I've always been on. I've always found it more uncomfortable playing things to my pals than releasing them. In my early days, I played all around the north. Way before I played anywhere local, because the idea of performing to my pals or family was like, nah,
terrifying.
That's horrible. Even as you say, even the playing term. And then I built my fan base of strangers before I got my friends on board, if you know what I mean. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that makes,
it was a weird one.
Sense.
It was almost a secret. It was like, I don't want them to know, but look, all you strangers over here, here's the shit I'm making, you know?
I think it's maybe something to do with me being an only child. I think a lot of stuff was bounced off my mum. Straight away. And my mum's got a wicked taste in music. So when I started making music, I really did look to my mum for that. When I say my mum's got a good taste in music, it's not a fucking joke, man. She's introduced me to the dopest shit only, you know. I grew up on Nirvana, Radiohead, Soundgarden, Sneaker Pimps, you know, Gangstar. My mum played me Dizzy Rascal when I was four. Now at school, she was like, check this dude out. Do you know what I mean?
Amazing.
And so I really value her opinion. Still do, yeah. So maybe that's what it is, that I never quite found a space outside of that, especially with music. Maybe with other stuff, with other disciplines, writing. I'm doing long form writing at the moment, like book writing, and I do feel a bit more like hunched over, no, you're not allowed to look at this.
Don't look at this.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I do. So maybe it was just, maybe that's a skill I'll gather more as I get older.
How's it been playing this record to your mum? Because it's quite personal in places, and you talk about family and upbringing and things. All sorts of personal stuff. So how was that to kind of go, look, check this out? what was her reaction?
My mum and dad. I don't know. I'll talk about the first song, Son of a Gun, on the album, because it answers all of these questions at once, and also my own dilemmas, because I think Son of a Gun is like the best thing I've ever done, and I didn't know. Here's the best example. So I now love Son of a Gun. I think it's brilliant, but I didn't know it was good until I played it to my cousin. This is how my mind works. So I had a bunch of demos that I'd made with this guy in the same week with Dan Holloway, incredible producer, and I just had these demos and I just create them and I'm like, I think it's just, I don't know, and I just kind of like drift around, And I had my cousin with me. Oh, I fucking adore, love her like a sister. And we were driving and I played her the one that I thought was banging. And she was like, yeah, yeah, it's cool. And I was like, oh, fuck, man. You know that response, like, yeah, you know, yeah, that. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, fuck, man. I really thought that was. And then I was like, well, look, I did this other one as well. And I played Son of a Gun to her. And she was like, yo, that is a banger. And I'm like, what, really? And she was like, yeah, yeah, that's the one. So I just get gassed and then I start going in, and then I went in, rewrote everything, twisted it up, added that other section, and just built this song because I was so buzzed, and I could see it. It was an authentic response from my cousin, and I respect my cousin's opinion. That's an important thing too. Obviously, if it was someone whose opinion I didn't respect, I wouldn't care. But I made this song, and yeah, I one of the lyrics is, my mum's got anger issues, and then and then I can feel it in my tissue. I want to get it out. And then can't be wishful when you're the son of a loaded pistol, son of a gun. That's the crux of the song. And then in the video for the song, I also put a quote by Gabor Mate, an incredible, I don't know what he is, kind of philosopher, sociologist, what the fuck? Social guy, talking about like single parents and not having dads around and shit. So yes, both my parents at points have perhaps considered that it was a personal thing. My mum is an incredible woman, and she has a bit of oomph to her. Like she's like anti-systemic. Like she fucking wants, she's hated the government since I was born. I was born into protest. I literally was, but I felt like I came out of mum's vagina and walked straight into an anti-war protest. Do you know what I mean? So sure, there's perhaps that specks of truth, but ultimately I created a song based off of what I was reading at the time. That was it. Yeah. I'm fascinated by the idea of upbringing, by cycles, childhood, whatever. And I wanted to write a song about, the effects of a heartbroken mother on a child. It is essentially fiction that I sprinkle my own reality into. So that's something I told my parents, and obviously they fuck with it. I mean, they love the song. Yeah. They both love the tune.
I love it. That's how I've always written. Everyone always thinks I've written this most personal, open stuff, and it's drawn from personal emotions and feelings, but I've always written fiction because exactly those things. It's finding the stories I want to tell, drawing from your own from some of your own experiences or some of your own feelings or stuff you've witnessed. But yeah. So I connect on that, yeah.
I think so too. And also, I feel like I hear it. That's what confuses me sometimes. I feel like I hear other artists do that. So maybe it's just a case of I'll never get to see the artists talk to the people that they think that feel as though they're being spoken about. You know, I don't see that part of it. I just hear the song and I go, oh shit, that's so dope that artist said it like that.
Yeah.
Because I think my belief with expression generally is... again, something that I sometimes struggle with, because I think that I should be as truthful as possible, even at the expense of uncomfortable truths. Yeah. And as I get older, the concept of privacy seems to become a bit more of an overbearing idea, because you're protecting people suddenly when you get older and you've got responsibility. You feel like you're protective more. But I say to my mum and dad and people around me, I say that I need to be authentic and truthful, because I'm just one life. I've only got this little short time on the planet, but words and shit like that, they live forever, you know? And the impact that it can have on people is immeasurable. So why wouldn't I say something that could create a movement? You know, that's what's so fascinating about words. It's shamanism, man. It's this shit can create. So yeah, I'll take a speck of truth and I'll push it and I'll make it a bigger story that feels uncomfortable, because that's how things change.
Completely agree, man. I've always had that. I had a breakthrough moment of talking to Billy Bragg and him talking about going and seeing Joe Strummer talk and it inspiring him to start doing his stuff. And that realization that if you start thinking about, oh, I want to change the world, it seems like a huge task, but thinking I want to change worlds, like Joe Strummer changed Billy Bragg's world there. Billy Bragg later changed my world and numerous other people's worlds. Yeah. And it's like, right, it's not that thing of this protest song, the Tories are going to hear it and go, nah, fair play, actually. We should. Nah, you've made a good point there. But it will be heard by these different people, and they will then move on and change, and they will influence people and so on and so forth. So, yeah. A change in individual worlds is completely realistic, and that's the power of words, you know.
It is a power of words.
And then goes on to change the world as a whole. It's a beautiful thing.
It is. And I think it's hard to hold on to that understanding in our kind of ever narcissistic world, but that is, of course, what it is. Do you ever listen back to your stuff that you made before?
No, man, can't stand it. And what, any time I've had to, because I run my label as well, if I do like a 10-year anniversary vinyl or something, I have to listen to the test presses, like, so I have to listen to this album I wrote 10 years ago fucking 10 times in a row. Worst day of my year every time I have to do that.
No.
I can't do it. I can't, for some reason I can't. It's not my thing. But it's similar with the acting. I really struggle seeing myself on screen and in things, even when it's like amazing stuff. I'm like, oh no, I don't want to see me in there. It's a weird one.
Really?
Yeah,
that's so weird, because you will also be able to self validate then. So you'll be able to write something, know it's great.
Yeah,
in your mind, put it out there confidently, but that's yet you it. Can't engage with it after that point. What?
Get out!
What?
Get out of here! But I want to. I'm conscious of time, and I want to talk about Sunshine Skin, because that's the track that just blew me away, man. It started, hey. I was in my car and I was cranking it all, like the first time I was listening, it started and I thought, I'm not sure this one's going to be my kind of thing. For some reason, that instant start, I was like, I don't know about this. And by the end, I was like, this is fucking amazing. And that's the one that I just played 4 or 5 times on loop. And I think it's astounding, man. I think it's so... Again, I don't know. Is maybe it's because of, as I've said, I've really enjoyed watching you kind of find yourself as a person, and it felt like a track that is about that acceptance, that validation. It's validation. It's you saying, you know what, I'm wicked, and that's okay. I don't have to question this or doubt this, and that's what that track feels like. It's weirdly, it's almost what we've been talking about for this whole.
I know.
This whole episode.
I've been trying to do it. I've been trying to do it the whole time, find myself. Ultimately, that's what all those albums are, isn't it? It's like everything's a search for identity. I love that you love that. I've actually had a really good response to that song. I made that with my friend Craigie Dodds, who is an incredible producer and songwriter. And he basically had a version of that song that he sent to me years ago with, you know, lyrics and melody, which is something that... I don't usually, create most things from the ground up. But Craigie and I have been long-time collaborators. We also made another song on that album called Feel Joy, which is about to have the dopest music video, by the way, but that's a whole other thing. And yeah, I heard it and I originally wrote something to it, and then some weird stuff happened where the song couldn't get used, or I don't know what, it was like, it just disappeared. I kept hitting him up about it. He wouldn't respond. And it just wouldn't, it was like it lived in me, the song. I could not stop thinking about it. I've written like 3 different versions of the song. I wrote a version after Grenfell, actually. And like some of those lyrics are still in there, which is another, it's like an in-depth thing. But after the Grenfell thing, I really wanted to put out that song. And I couldn't legally for this weird contractual thing. And then it went by. And then like all these waves and like social political like dilemma just kept coming, and it kept pushing me into this point of self-reflection or frustration, which, you know, the song kind of crescendos in that way. It starts off soft and then it kind of goes into this scream. And then, yeah, the final thing was just after that first lockdown, in the middle of that first lockdown, when you got this racial tension around the world, and I just hit up Craigie. I was like, bro, I've got to do that song. I'm sorry. I have to, I have to do it. I've written it again.
Yeah.
And I have to come and do that song. And he was like, you know what? Let's fucking do it. Like it was, for whatever reason, everything aligned. Right. And I remember when the restrictions lifted, one of the first things I did was go to London and record that song. And I think everyone who hears it, it seems to have quite a special connection to it. It's just about people hearing it, I suppose. I'm super, super proud of it. And Craigie always gets the best out of my voice. He really pushes me. you know, not, I'm not, I of course started out as a rapper and I love singing, but he's always, even songs that people will never hear, he's in the studio and he somehow gets me to just sing the full voice, highest notes, you know what I mean? Like crazy falsetto. Yeah, like, I don't even fucking know. It's one of those, yeah, man, I'd love to, I dream of making like kind of whole projects with some of the producers on that album. But
yeah,
I love that that resonated with you, man.
I love it. I love it. And speaking of London there and these tracks, again, living in you and with you for a while, I think when this comes out, it will have happened, but you've got a rare live appearance lined up for this. How are you feeling about that? Like, what's your thoughts and plans on on performing these live?
I don't know, man. I'm going to be doing a lot of that today, I think. I've kind of been putting it off. I don't know. Scroob, it's a weird one, mate. Like, it's a weird one that I'm so happy that you're talking to me about the album because it is essentially an independent release and I really do want people to hear it. But yeah. I haven't engaged with the endeavor like it's like I don't have that same hustle, perhaps.
Yeah,
doing it because I enjoy it and I think it's good. But touring and performing, I haven't thought about it. I was so focused on just releasing the music. So I got approached to headline this night and I thought, well, I should perform it at least once. Do you know what I mean? I should at least try. So yeah, I just have to think of a set list. And I've started to understand that what I want people to feel is how I felt creating the album. So that's what's playing on my mind at the moment. Yeah. I've never sung solo stuff live before, so that'll be testing. I sung with Wildhood, but my whole tone of voice is very different on this project. It's very soft and it's going to be tough, you know, to sing live. So that I've got to practice and maybe do some singing lessons. But I want people to just feel how I felt creating the songs. And I think it's going to, but I think I'm going to be, everything's going to happen in real time. I'm going to realize I'm performing at the same time as people watch me perform. And then I'm going to realize that performance is such an essential part of creating at the same time as people experience it. And then I'll probably come off stage and be like, why the fuck haven't I performed this more? And then I'll think about performing obsessively for a month. And then I'll probably just get back to writing scripts.
Yeah, I love it. Well, again, before we wrap things up, I want to talk about acting and scripts and film and TV because you're out, like, that's the reason you're in Budapest at the moment, right?
Is that right? Yeah, I'm shooting a TV shot here, yeah.
How are you feeling about all that? Because I'm really glad you're doing more and more of it. Because, again, as we've discussed on beach walks, I think it's a really good world for you. I think you're really good. I'm sure when we did the first podcast, you were like, I don't know, man, is what it is.
Really?
These things will come up every now and then. Yeah, it was really not a focus. And I remember being like, no, this should be a bit of a focus because I think, it's before I'd moved into it, I think, properly. And then I think it was around that point I was just moving into acting or trying to. And yeah, at that point I was like, I'm figuring out how to get into it all. And you were kind of, I'm not sure about it. Or you didn't seem, focused or sure on it. But it seems now it's come together wonderfully. You've done some great stuff and more ahead from what I can see.
Yeah, I actually refuse to take acting seriously. I don't know. I find your career trajectory super inspiring because I'm always fascinated with people who have like multiple disciplines. I just think that's a really hard thing to balance. So anytime I see examples of that, I'm like, oh my God. And also, I don't know about you, but I get envious of people who have like singular disciplines. I just always think like, wow, you're just out here just putting hours into the same fucking thing. That makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
But with acting, I don't know. I've just had, I think, you know what? I listened to Kay. I listened to the podcast you did with Kay like three episodes ago. And I remember they said that acting was the most tumultuous career path because of their girlfriend.
Yeah.
And 100% agree. Of all the things I've done, most heartbreaking, you know, and every time I've applied myself to it, it's almost like it's fueled with this rejection and whatever else. And honestly, Scroob, every time I don't give a fuck, I get jobs.
Yeah.
So with acting, I love acting.
Or thinking about it, all this talk that we've had so far about validation. Yeah, acting is the worst industry for you in the world. Ignore everything I've said. It's the opposite of validation. It's absolute try really hard at this and then we'll never even ring you back.
It's a fucking nightmare. Do you know what it is though? It's tough. Yeah,
it's why it works for me, as we've said. It's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm not going to, as long as I've done it good, I'll forget about it. But yeah.
Yeah, well, you've got to have a thick skin for sure. Yeah. And I think it's more, I don't mind. So rejection I can deal with is dishonesty that struggles, or not dishonesty, but just the ever-changing climate within acting. Like, yeah. I've literally been told I've had parts before. I don't know if you've ever experienced this before.
Yeah.
I've been actively told or very, very, very heavily encouraged to believe that I have a role. Mm-hmm. And then I just don't have it.
Yeah.
I've never experienced an industry that does that. Like, it will literally go...
I've had that twice and... I currently have it at the moment.
Yeah.
Genuinely, what is that? Each time I talk to the producer, who's a mate, he's a really, like, I'm sure, each time I talk, I say, look, I'm sure it's not happening. He's like, no, it definitely is. I'm like, fuck, just allow me to forget about it. And I'm sure it will. From what he said, I'm sure it will. But it's a weird one where I'm like, a week or two will go by and I'll go, I think this is what happened on this other project. Like, they've said... Personally, you've definitely got it. We can't wait to work with you. But it's not... And again, I understand that because there's so many levels in this industry. So someone has turned around and gone, that ain't going to work. So
yeah,
I'm fine with it and I've got used to it now. But yeah, it's one of them where I'm like, either give me my dates or let me off the leash.
I actually said it in an audition. I do a lot of... Because I never... I was learning as I'm going along with the etiquette of acting and stuff like that. I say stuff like that. I had a recall last year and the director went, that was gorgeous. Are you definitely free in August? And I said, don't ask me that unless you're serious. Yeah. that was actually my response.
Yeah.
And I remember they were a little bit taken aback, but in hindsight, I shouldn't have said anything. If I had that now, I wouldn't care because I'm in a different mindset. I'm writing my own scripts. That's how I survive in that industry, is focusing on other things. But at the time, 100%. I cared. I cared at the time and I didn't get it. And I almost wanted to ring back and be like, that's why you shouldn't say that shit. Like, you can like my audition, but don't fucking ask me
specific.
I'm starting ranting soon. Also, it's champagne problems, isn't it? Because, you know.
No, I feel you, man. Honestly, look, we're looking at each other now, right? My hair and beard are the messiest they've been in a while. It's because I'm not getting a cut because I want to hear about this role first.
Really?
Because it's the kind of role where I probably shouldn't have a tight cut or anything like that. So I'm like, I'm not that it's big things, but it's impacted my life until I know.
Yeah.
If they ring me tomorrow and go, oh, it's not worked out, I'll be in the hairdressers. I'll be getting tidy. The sun started to come out. I'll be having a tidier beard and getting trim, but I'm not because of that, because it's a role where it's like, right, I shouldn't. Do you know what I mean? So as you say, if they say to you, are you definitely free in August and you're into this role, you're going to be free in August now.
Until
they tell you otherwise.
Oh, mate.
It's a weird one.
It's a savage industry, but I will continue to act, because I've been falling forwards of acting anyway. I just kind of, if I get offered an opportunity, I'll give it a go. I'm really fascinated with writing. I feel like as I get older and as my life changes in terms of what I enjoy about life, I feel as though I'm heading into a space where long form writing, whether that's scripts or books, would suit me best. I really am having a constant battle with the ever-changing online space. I understand the benefits of it. I understand why I've got interact with it. But at the moment, there is a fundamental, like what feels like my soul or whatever, human rejection of this, you know what I mean? This like heightened state of like internet reality. I can't deal with it. I like walking in nature. I like being elusive. I don't like comparing myself. I don't like looking at things through stats. I would rather things were just billboards and you know, I would just want people to interact with each other again more. I don't know. But then, so I think I would suit, and this might change, but I think I might suit a more reclusive existence where I can focus on huge thing like writing a book or writing a script and then kind of come out of the wilderness. I really fantasize every day about disappearing off social media. If I didn't have to be on there to sell tickets and shit, I'd be gone.
Same, and I can't decide how much of it we justify because of our addiction and how much of it, like I'm exactly the same. Like, I need to be on there because of work. Do I?
Yeah.
Do I? Because I think I do, but like, again, easy example, a mate I've made in acting, huge star, Tom Hardy. He wasn't on any socials all of this time. He's now on there. He barely uses it. It's just there because he needed it for work. He was like, it does affect things. Yeah, and where he's producing stuff too. But he wasn't on there all this time. But then I say in my mind, yeah, but I ain't Tom fucking Hardy. You know, I need to be on there to hustle my way up to do this, to do that. But bro, I think it's a weird level of we justify it a bit because, because it's social media and it draws you in.
Apparently, a lot of the technology around the Silicon Valley-based, you know, tech communities that created all of this stuff, a lot of the psychological elements of it are based around an experiment done with pigeons in like the 40s, where it was just this guy who became this scientist, I suppose, or physician. He was front of Time magazine, all of this, for this one discovery, which is that you can get a pigeon to do anything if you reward it instantly. That was that research is still like, we are I don't say better, but I suppose we are no more advanced than a pigeon in terms of how we interact with this stuff. And I feel it. I'm like, fuck, man. If I get loads of likes, I'm buzzing my tits off doing more. If I don't, there's a deficit. I feel weird. It's like, what the fuck is that? I feel a lot happier. I feel happy when my phone's off, let alone social media. But
mate, to wrap things up, I can't wait to walk in nature with you again soon and not be on screens and socials and technology. What's ahead? Is there anything else you want to mention or plug?
No, I think ultimately, I've got a kid's book that's coming out in a couple of months, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Tell me
a bit about that. What's going on?
It's a kid's book I wrote years and years and years ago, and it's just finally coming out. It's a bit surreal, really. I haven't even got my head around it, but I'll be promoting that, I suppose. It's called The Missing Piece. It's in dedication to my grandmother, my late grandmother, and did it with a girl called Beth Susanna, who's an amazing artist, and hopefully I'll be talking loads about it at some point. But
I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things happening at once this year. Yeah,
yeah.
But I also would just like to use this as an opportunity for anybody out there who struggles with self-validation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That this is proof that you're not fucking alone, man.
Yeah.
And also, one thing I've noticed is that, especially if you have a creative mind, a friend said this to me, that power that you have to look at things through a different perspective, approach things from different scenarios, when that turns inward, that's a big thing to fight against, you know?
Yeah.
I get deep. Like this morning when I was feeling moody, what I'm fighting is like an incredibly creative conspiracy theorist against it. I imagine this person with
the
like
creativity to tear yourself down is
next level. Standing there, going, listen, I've looked through these mentions and your texts from friends over the last year or so. Also, just generally the responses from, I'd say, critics over the last 10 years, and I can safely conclude that you're actually not as talented as I thought you were. I have evidence.
It's fucked up. Yeah, I've done my research and I can confirm you're fucking worthless. Well, ignore that voice. And I'm glad we got to talk so openly about it all, because I do think hearing these conversations is big for people. So nice one, man. This has been a joy.
Do you reckon? I hope so. Well, thanks, Group, and thank you for continuing to do all this, the distraction pieces. I think they're so dope. And, like, what a list of people you've had now, man.
I've had a few. It gets mad.
I can't believe it's my second time. I'm well excited. I want to try and get to, like, 5. You better stop doing it.
It's happening.
You better not stop doing it, as I said. You better not stop for all eternity.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Jordan Stevens. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I hope Jordan enjoyed it, man. Because I worry sometimes when I spring these big questions on people. Because if it's someone I'm really relaxed with, I'll throw out some big life questions and that can be unexpected at times. So, yeah, got nothing but love for Jordan. As said, check out Let Me Die Inside You now. It's cracking. And, yeah, just keep an eye on what that boy is doing. I think there's a lot ahead for him. As said, I'll be back on Friday with an amazing episode with Joe Barton. Another one that was just one of my favourite chats. Joe's so honest and open about writing, about the film industry, about the TV industry. He's another one that's more than happy to go there. He's got a new show out called The Lazarus Project on Sky with previous guest Papa S.A. Adu and numerous other amazing people. It's getting crazy good write-ups. The dude is destined for big, big things. He's already doing big, big things, but yeah. And we talk about when big, big things are pulled away from him. So it's an interesting chat. Because often when you've worked on anything with, you know, a Marvel or a DC or one of these big comic book lots, you can't really talk about it. But it seems he can, because we did. So here we go. So I'll see you on Friday for that. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.